Good morning and welcome back to Nach Yomi. Today we're going to be learning together Dira Yamim Aleph Perek Yud Aleph, the 11th chapter of the first book of Dira Yamim. And our Perek is 47 psukim long and is roughly divided into two basic sections. The first section is about David HaMelech becoming king and conquering Yerushalayim. That's part one. And the second part is the Giborim, David HaMelech's essentially army and his leaders of the army. We're going to try to start off now as we move through Sefer Dira Yamim, focusing on also the parallel prakim, which are to be found in Sefer Shmuel and Melachim. So the parallel prakim to appreciate in contrast and in comparison to our perek is Shmuel Bey's perek Hey and Shmuel Bey's perek Chav Gimel, paralleling the first and the second half of our perek. Let's take a look at the perek at the beginning. The first three psukim deal with David HaMelech being appointed as king. We hear about a delegation of all of Israel who come to David HaMelech and say, you know, you are our flesh and blood, you are our king. We knew that you are the king, as Shmuel HaNavi had said, we want you to become a king. They come to him in Hebron, and all of the elders of Israel come to him, they make a covenant with him, and they make him a king in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, b'lifnei Hashem, v'yimshuchu es David l'melech al Yisrael, k'dvar Hashem b'yad Shmuel, as Shmuel had prophesied, as Shmuel had appointed. So just a few things to notice is that this is a very, very big summary of many years and many details. So for instance, what is not mentioned here, just the left out points, is that there was 7 years in which David HaMelech was the king in Hebron, only over the tribe of Yehuda, during which time the son of Shaul HaMelech Ish-Boshes ruled over the rest of the kingdom. That's not mentioned here. Also, we don't hear about the ongoing attrition with the north and the negotiations after and during the death and murder of Avner. So all those details are left out. It seems to be just a very smooth transition from Shaul to David, and that's the way it's presented. The Malbim points out that's exactly the point. Ezra's not giving us all the details. Sefer Shmuel is extant. People have Sefer Shmuel. He's giving us a brief summary to get us to the main point, which is Malchus Beis David. Fascinating aside, why is David HaMelech in Hebron for all these years? Hebron, of course, is a very holy place. It's in the Shevet of Yehuda. But Chida points out that David HaMelech was a Gilgul, a returned neshama of Adam HaRishon. We know that Adam HaRishon lived 1,030 years. And the Midrash famously says that he donated essentially 70 of the years of his 1,000 that he was supposed to have to David HaMelech's 70 years. And because Adam HaRishon, in a certain sense, incorporated all the neshamas of all of humanity to follow, David HaMelech had that capacity within him, and he was nurtured spiritually as a king in Hebron, which is where Adam was buried, and all the patriarchs and matriarchs who essentially contained all the neshamas of Klal Yisrael there afterwards to be included as well. The Ralbag adds as well that it's important to notice that we're only going to slow down and really focus on details and get extra details when we get to Malchus Shlomo as well. One little detail is also here is it says the covenant was made lifnei Hashem, in front of God. Well, Hebron in lifnei Hashem. There's no Mishkan here. So the Maharashi points out a very beautiful idea, and that is that any time we have a covenant made in the name of God, that is lifnei Hashem. That's a very beautiful idea because that means it could be anywhere as well. We move on from Sukkim Dalet. So we hear about the conquest of Yerushalayim. David HaMelech comes, and the Jebusites, the Yevusi, are still inhabiting the land and the area of Yerushalayim. And he turns and he says that he tries to send for peace, and he asks them, he sends to them, and he conquers Mitzuras Tzion, but ultimately the Jebusites refuse to make peace, they refuse to deal with David HaMelech. David HaMelech makes a certain competition where he says, whoever is going to conquer the Yevusi first will be my sire, will be my Rosh and sire, will be my head. And in fact, Yoav ben Tzeruya does do this and becomes the head of his army at this point in time. And he makes Ir David, the area of Ir David, which today you can go visit still. And this is where David HaMelech now finds his greatness. One thing that's important is there are a number of things that are left out in Sefer Shmuel. There, if you go read back in Sefer Shmuel, you'll hear that the defense mechanisms which prevented Israel from conquering Jerusalem was Ivrim and Pischim. Very fascinating discussion. Did they have automatons that were powered by water, which made it very difficult for soldiers to enter, armed onto automatons powered by water systems? That was one option. Or maybe they had these statues of a Iver or Pesach, a blind and a crippled person, sort of reminding them of the covenant, the intergenerational covenant of Avimelech and Avraham, that perhaps they were still extant because there was some great grandson who was still around, you know, or whether it means to say they were using civilian casualties, you know, they're using some of the weaker in society as on the ramparts. Whichever it was, that's all omitted here. It's made much simpler. The Rabbi does point out that we don't hear about Yoav being the one to take up the gauntlet in Sefer Shmuel. This is the additional detail that we get only in Sefer Direi Yamim. We're going to have to read Direi Yamim and Shmuel and Melachim as complementary svarim. Perhaps he was left out in Sefer Shmuel for the simple reason is that Yoav is in a certain sense in shame because he has just murdered Avner. So David Melech is very upset with him. So I mean, the fact that Yoav took this job and became the head of the army perhaps is a moment of sadness, is something which is omitted. And why is it that Yerushalayim is so important? Why is this the first thing in detail that's mentioned? For a very simple reason. David Melech, politically speaking, Yerushalayim is on the northmost border of the land of Yehuda. He's trying to unite Israel, so he's going to take an area which is on the border of Yehuda and Binyamin, Binyamin from the tribes of the Bnei Rachel, trying to create unity. Of course, also spiritually, he has already received the plans of the Beis Hamikdash from Shmuel at Ramah, Benayot Beramah, and so he knows about this. He knows that he is going to be able to unite Israel around a spiritual center, and in order to do this, he does it. He does it moving away from tribalism into monarchy by setting the Yerushalayim as the capital, as the spiritual center of Israel. We now move into the second half of the parak. The second half of the parak deals with Roshei HaGiborim, the leaders of his warriors. So we hear about from Sukkim Yud to Yudalit, we hear about these three main Giborim, these three great soldiers. Their names are recorded here, Yeshavam ben Chachmoni and Elazar ben Dodoi Ha'achochi. Now, it describes their greatness. You know, we hear about Yeshavam killing with his spear 300 people. Elazar was able to be in a field and he conquered the Plishtim when he was in that field and he escaped. Some acts of great courage. A few things to notice is that you may have been counting, but there were only two Giborim mentioned. Where is the third? Quick question. But before we go further, what is their role? What seems to be the role of these Giborim? So it seems these are officers in the army who are in charge of much larger groupings of troops. And the Ralbag points out that they were actually assembled before David Melech becomes king over all of Israel, even during the times that he was in Hebron. It's important to notice that there are a number of discrepancies between the accounting here and the accounting in Sefer Shmuel. So, for instance, in Sefer Shmuel, we hear about the three Giborim in Perek Chof Gimel, and they are Adinoi, Elazar, and Shama. The only common name over there is Elazar. Also, it's that Shama kills 800 people, and here we hear about him killing only 300 people. There Elazar is in a field of lentils, here is in a field of barley. So the Malbim explains, no. Ezra is filling in the details. Yes, Adina must be Yeshavam. Why is he called Yeshavam? Because you see in Sefer Shmuel that after the battle of killing 800 people, he returned on Shabbos to learn Torah, meaning to say he was able to separate what he needed to do on the battlefield and his spiritual pursuits. That's why it's called Yeshavam, because he returned to the people. So it's really the same person. There's a discrepancy between the 800 or 300 that he kills. The Ralbag says, yes, he killed 800 in his life. He was an ace. If you looked at his airplane, he had lots of little stickers of all the folks that he killed, but 300 of them were killed with his spear, and that's what's being mentioned over here. So the Mefarshim deal with trying to pull together the Sefer Shmuel recounting and the Sefer Direi Yamim recounting. Then we get a very fascinating story. Psukim Tesvav to Yud Tes, we hear about the story of the water. It's when David HaMelech is in the area of Moras al-Dulam, in the cave of Adulam, and he's fighting against the Plishtim. David HaMelech really just wanted to have some water. He wanted to have a water from a spring or a well in Bethlehem, Beis Lechem, and that's exactly where the Philistines were actually assembled. So these three Giborim go and break through the war front. They're able to get at great peril to the well. They bring out the water. They bring it back to David HaMelech. And David HaMelech doesn't want to drink it now. And he brings it as a nesek, as a libation to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he says, how could I drink this if these people put their lives at risk for this? Fascinating story. What's really going on over here? First of all, when did this take place? The Malbim says, this is immediately after conquering Yerushalayim. We see that in Perakei and Sefer Shmuel, the Plishtim waged war against David. And this is the reprise against that attack. Are these three the same Giborim? The Malbim says no, they're the second tier of Giborim, and sort of says it's the three. Okay. What's the story about? What's really going on over here? So on a pshat level, it seems to be that David HaMelech is not looking just for an easy cup of water, right? He just, you know, why does he have to send his folks into a coffee shop in the Palestinian territories? Why is that necessary? So David HaMelech, the point is like this. David HaMelech grew up in Beis Lechem. What he was doing is he was yearning, Rashi says he was yearning for the water of his youth because that's the taste. People like the taste of their water. But perhaps if you dig it a little deeper, it means to say that he was remembering back to those placid days, those days of carefreeness where there weren't war after war and difficulty after difficulty. That nostalgia is what David HaMelech, in the thick of battle, he's becoming nostalgic with where there's death at hand right now. And the gate of Beis Lechem, I mean, when he thinks about where it is, where the well is, that's where Boaz agreed to marry Ruth, and the whole consummation of Malchus Beis David goes back. He's going back to those areas. He's sort of trying to remove himself from the thickness of the death around him. Why are the Giborim taking this so seriously to risk their lives? Maybe because they maybe hear the helplessness in the voice of nostalgia. They want to make sure that everything is taken care of, and they demonstrate that even during the state of emergency, when the enemy's at the doorstep, they're ready to take charge, and they're going to be in charge of the land. Meaning to say, you know, we have the right. We have Temple Mount. We can put cameras there when we want to. We can put metal detectors there when we want to. Meaning we have the right to do what we want. Yes, there might be an insurgency right now, but we really ultimately control this land, and that's what the Giborim were displaying to David HaMelech as well. On a drash level, it seems that David HaMelech was asking, based on the Gemara in Baba Kama, Daf Samach Amud Beis, he asked a more complex question. He was asking a halachic shaila, and that was the following. He knew that the Philistines were hiding in haystacks, and therefore in order for them to have a safe battle, he would need to burn down the fields, burnt earth policy, and to kill the Philistines laying in ambush. But by doing so, he'd be ruining the property of individual Israelites. Is he allowed to do this? And the answer that he received, this is the water that he was asking from the Giborim. It wasn't a physical challenge, it was a spiritual challenge, and the response the Sanhedrin sent him through the Giborim was essentially that you are allowed to because you're a king, and the idea is Melech poreitz la'asos lo derech ve'en moichem yodai. A king has the right to do this. And what David HaMelech was struggling with, he didn't want to in the end, he was struggling with the perspective of the collective and the perspective of the individual. When are the individual rights lost when it comes to the collective? When does the individual need to take sacrifices on behalf of the collective? This is a value which is being lost in Western self-focused society, with the notion of I need to do something which does involve risks, maybe even minimal risks, but just so that other people can also be safe, so that society should be safe. Something very appropriate to be thinking about during specifically Corona times. The Catholic author John Paul Johnson, when he had a conversation with Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, when he would speak to him, Paul Johnson wrote a book called The History of the Jews. And when Rabbi Sacks asked him, why is it you're drawn to the Jewish people? He responded, he says that he pointed out that if you look throughout history, there are societies which only focus on the individual, like Western society today, and there are societies which only focus on the collective, like communist Russia or China. He says Judaism is the ability to be able to balance between those two ideas, collective and individual responsibility. That was the question David HaMelech was asking about getting this water, which is essentially the question Halachi asked. Then we hear about Psukim Chof Techof. We hear the story about Avishai. We hear about how he too also kills 300 people in his courageousness. Is he part of the three or not? The Metzora says no. He has the same valor as the three Giborim, but he's not actually part of them himself. Question that Rashi asks is, why is Yoav not here? Yoav was the head of his army. So Rashi said, no, because he was above all of them. He controlled all of these Giborim, which is why he's not here. We next hear about, in Chof Beis to Chof Hei, the story of Benayahu ben Ish Chayil. We hear about him that he's from Rav Palim in Kavtzael. He comes from Kavtzael, and he talks about how he does three acts of courageousness. He kills two Moabite generals, he kills a lion in a pit on a snowy day, and he also kills a very large Egyptian soldier. These are all demonstrations of his courageousness. These can all be taken literally, as many of them for Hashem do. The Gemara in Brachos and Daf Yud Ches on Aleph to Beis tells us that in fact this refers to more allegorically the idea that he was distinct between the two Batei Megdash, Shnei Ariel Moav, that refers to the two Batei Megdash. He was spiritually distinct, but through these times, and he was a Kavtzael. He gathered all the teachings of Torah, the breaking through the ice to get to the mikveh. So it's all spiritual teachings rather than necessarily physical acts of courageousness. righteousness. This is important because Benayahu is also a Kohen, and the Radak struggles with ideas. How could it be a Kohen is a general in the army? On the one hand, when his job was to actually kill Yoav at the behest of David HaMelech later on, we know that the Radak suggests that, in fact, when he tried how to kill Yoav, he did it in a way that he wounded him in a way that would kill him, but had to run away so that he was not become tame, that he would not become impure. So he had this struggle being a spiritual leader and a physical military leader at the same time. The Radak does say that because this is a milchemes mitzvah that he was appointed for, he had the right to be able to become tame, even though it involved murder and involving the necessary machinations of war as well, which is the complexity of Benayahu, which seems to be expressed here. As we close the parak, look for Psukim Chavov 2, Mem Aleph, where we hear about now the names of the Giborim underneath them. So this essentially there goes Yoav, three Giborim, another tier of three Giborim. There's Avishai mentioned and Benayahu, a part of them. And then we have these 30 next names. In this list of 30, it is worthwhile noting the name Asael, who's the brother of Avishai and Yoav, who was killed by Avner, and also Uriah Chiti, who was one of David HaMelech's officers, who David HaMelech sent to the war front and married his wife, Bathsheba. We also then hear at the end of the parak, Membeis to Memzayin, about Giborim, as the Ralbag points out that in this additional list of 14, these are new names not mentioned in Sefer Shmuel, and the reason why these new names are not mentioned is because Sefer Shmuel is only focusing on those who are always attendant and around David HaMelech, and now we have a broader list which is going to continue into Perek Yud Beis as well. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.